right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Friday, so that means all the regular Friday features. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, you big dummy. They're all coming up. We're going to talk about great movie mistakes and continuity errors that are hilarious. And if you guys have any memorables, you can call us up with that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Fly Jam requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Also, Brad Schreiber is going to join us in just a couple of seconds here to talk comedy and his books. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about you?
I'm all right. We're wrong mic you're talking into.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense. Why I can't hear myself.
Oh, okay.
I'm well, like, what's wrong with my headphones?
So there's Dan. He's here all morning long till 5 o'clock. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Good morning, sir. Doing well.
Good, good, good. He's in the newsroom taking care of that. And I know both of you guys are very excited for the Bears game this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are going to be very, very excited for Sunday. It's going to be crazy down here, especially if they win. It's going to be nuts. So anyway, big weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hawks play tonight. We'll see what happens. If they can do two in a row, that would be stunning. So anyway, but that's all coming up this weekend. But we got a really great guest in the wings here. We want to get him on because he's so much fun. Brad Schreiber is going to join us after we take a break here. And we got a ton of stuff to talk to him about. He's a great guy. And that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday is coming up. 312-981-7200 for your request. Also, straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, you big dummy. All of the regular Friday features will be coming up. We're also going to be talking about great movie mistakes and movie continuity errors that are hilarious, and we can point some of them out. And if you guys have any great ones, we want to hear from you on that. So that's all coming up. But right now, we want to welcome back to the show Brad Schreiber, who is the author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. He is also the co-author of Where's My Fortune Cookie? With Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater. And yeah, Phil's been on the show a couple of times to talk about that book, and we had Brad on too. And we're going to talk about comedy and his books and all that great stuff. And let's welcome Brad Schreiber to the show. Brad, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nick, thank you so much. Happy holidays all over you in there. Chicago.
There you go. Well,
get
listen,
this stuff off of me.
Well, listen, let's before we jump into some of your books and What Are You Laughing At, which we talked a little bit about the last time you were on the show.
Yeah.
Give everybody your background and where you're from and how you got into comedy and all that.
Oh, my God, a psychotic background, but I've enjoyed every minute. You're just run-of-the-mill screenwriter, producer, actor, playwright, consultant, author, you know. Born in New York City, I've worked with some really phenomenal people. You mentioned Phil Proctor, who was my idol when I was going to San Francisco State University, Firesign Theater.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've also gotten to do playwright work with Sam Shepard and Edward Albee gave me a residency. I did radio with some really cool people, including the engineer for Stan Freberg, Carson Taylor. It's just been one of those weird lives. And one of the joys of it is when you love somebody, you suck up to them and go, hey, how'd you like me to write your book?
Yeah,
or as a journalist, you go, oh man, I would love to write about you. How about I put you in, you know, this magazine or this newspaper? So you get to fulfill a lot of fantasies that way.
And so, you're all over the map. Now, did you, you know, you mentioned Phil being, you know, one of your heroes. What other comedy got you when you were younger that really sort of influenced you and that has stayed with you throughout the years?
All right. I can tell you that visually, Ernie Kovacs stunned me. Now, we're talking about black and white television. That's how far back we're going.
Yeah.
But his sight gags, to me, were things that were used years later in things like Laugh-In. They were stealing ideas out of him.
Yeah, he was
that really struck me.
He was a true innovator. I mean, he was one of the most innovative men to ever, you know, like it, the medium of television changed because of him. He was brilliant.
Yeah, I remember one bit he did where there were some gunfighters who were, you know, of the old West shooting at each other, and he had a camera angle where you were looking through the holes in the guy's torso at the other guy who shot him. And the guy with the bullets in him is looking down like, oh, geez, this is really a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
He just phenomenal stuff. Or a periscope coming out of a bathtub that a woman is taking a bath in. He was just so imaginative and died tragically, you know, in an auto accident.
Yeah.
On Beverly Glen, you know, not far from where I live, but he was just phenomenally gifted, and he's one of those people who opened my eyes to the possibilities of what comedy could be. In terms of stand-up, of course, Lenny Bruce, and then I think George Carlin probably worked more with language than any comedian who's ever lived. One of my favorite lines, because I'm very political, Nick, is Carlin's, you know, even in a fake democracy, we deserve the illusion of freedom every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, he was phenomenal, and he did something very rare in comedy. The older he got, the better he got. Usually comedians are like, oh, God, I got to crank out another hour of material. What am I going to talk about? He just got crankier and more brilliant as he went along.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was just as strong later in his career than he was early in his career, and it was always interesting to see Brad how, you know, how his image so altered from when he first started, and the same thing with Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were both sort of the short haired suit wearing guys who didn't really work blue, and then they both gradually changed.
Then they both became dark blue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's the thing about stand-up comedy. You're free not only to use vulgarity, but to use material that would blow people's minds in another context. I mean, I told your lovely producer, Dapper Dan Segrew, that I was working on a new book called Music is Power,
mm-hmm.
which is going to come out next year. And the reason I bring it up, Nick, is because some of these music acts really went against the grain, not only comedy music acts, but, you know, political music acts. And they were castigated for it. Lenny Bruce is a perfect example of that. If Lenny Bruce had been born 10 years later, he would have been blowing people's minds on HBO Comedy Hours.
Right.
Instead, he was, you know, basically skewered for stuff that now today we take for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, and
you got to be born at the right time. That's the key to it.
Yeah, and again, but he is remembered. I mean, you know, it was unfortunate the you know, because it became about, you know, the controversy and him being arrested and being thrown in court and everything. And instead of doing the brilliant stuff that he was doing, he got sort of obsessed with that and talked about it on stage and everything. And even read from transcripts and stuff from his court trials.
Yeah, not so much fun reading, you know, the last thing anybody's going to laugh at is, you know, reading a court transcript. But my favorite story about Lenny is that George Carlin saw him at the Hungry Eye in San Francisco. And was so blown away that, you know, that was one of the times that Lenny was arrested for obscenity.
Yeah.
So they throw him in the back of the paddy wagon on Broadway in San Francisco, and Carlin is so moved by the act that he jumps in the back of the police wagon as an audience member. And Lenny Bruce, of course, doesn't know who the hell George Carlin is. He goes, who are you and what are you doing in here?
Yeah.
And Carlin says, man, I was so moved by what you said on stage. It was so amazing. I just had to jump in here with you. And Lenny Bruce looks at him and goes, schmuck.
As
only
Lenny
time
Bruce
they ever met.
That's the only time they ever met. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Mike, you mentioned a bunch of the people that you worked with. And I wanted to, you know, that you actually had encounters with Sam Shepard and Edward Albee.
Albee was a huge influence on me because when I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, I saw him lecture at Stanford, and I told him I wanted to go out to his foundation in Montauk, Long Island. And he's one of these guys who, he was one of these guys. He, for me, he's still alive. Yeah. He was such a vital guy. He was like real cranky and real prickly. But if he liked you, he was incredibly loyal. And he was one of the first people when I was in my 20s who made me feel like I was good, that I could do what I wanted to do. And it changed my life because I had that inner resolve. So yeah. I always appreciated that about him. And every few years when I would go to New York, I'd look him up and go visit him in his insanely large Tribeca loft that looked like a modern art museum.
And so in your relationship, you guys did you remain close throughout his or throughout the rest of his life?
Yeah, whenever I went to New York, we would get together, and he was somebody who really was, he so believed that writers should be free to do what they do. And of course, in the theater, you have a lot of control over your work. You write for TV or film, you make a lot of money, and you don't have so much control.
Yeah.
And Albee was about honoring playwrights and what they wanted to do, and not having artistic directors or directors of play go, yeah, it's a good play, but why don't you change it around and do this, that, and the other thing?
Right, right, right. And what about Sam Shepard? What was he like?
Shepard was, he was a cowboy. He really, when he taught at San Francisco, the Bay Area Playwrights Festival up there in Marin County, he was a he just wore blue jeans and he talked with a drawl, and he would talk about taking apart a play like it was the engine of a Ford truck. Mm. But he was really smart. His notes were really good. But he was quite a wacky character. I mean, he used to get drunk and take lassos and walk in downtown Mill Valley and lasso the parking meters. And the cops would go, oh, it's Sam Shepard. We can't do anything. Just, hey, Sam, how's it doing? Yeah, you know, yeah. Leave him alone. He's famous.
I got to say, his death had a massive impact on me. I've done theater I did theater here in Chicago for a long time, writing and directing shows.
Yeah, I know.
And I was just devastated when he passed away. He was just such an amazing writer and wrote so many incredible plays. He was also a terrific actor too. It was just that was a big one for me when he passed.
Well, of course, True West. You know, I think a lot of people on PBS saw your Chicagoans. You know,
yeah.
From Steppenwolf, we
yeah.
saw Sinise
and Malkovich.
Malkovich. And John Malkovich, yeah. And they did a tremendous job. I was lucky that I knew Sam when that was done at the Magic Theater in San Francisco, the original production.
Wow.
And I had a friend in the cast, and that was pretty thrilling.
It's fun,
like I say, that if you play your cards right and you offer something to your idols, you get to know them a little bit, and it really makes your life a little more special that way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that brings up Phil Proctor. Tell the story on how you hooked up with Phil, and then ended up co-writing that terrific book, "Where's My Fortune Cookie," with him.
Oh, thank you. Well, I loved Firesign Theater when I was in the Bay Area. I was on a PBS station, and every year we'd review their Halloween show. And when I came down here, my accountant knew Phil Proctor. And I put him in my book, Stop the Show, which is a book about everything that's ever gone wrong during live theater in the last 100 years. I put one of his stories in there. And then I started nudging him because he kept talking about doing a memoir. And I said, listen, it's time that you sit down and do this. And we probably recorded about 20 hours of him talking about some of his stories.
Yeah.
And then put it all together. And, you know, the trip about that, Nick, is that it's so exciting when you suggest something and the person goes, oh, my God, I forgot about it. Like, you know, I'm listening to WGN News before we go on the air, and your newscaster's talking about Maria Butina, you know, the the gun-toting Russian spy.
Right, right, right.
Well, Phil Proctor, when he went to Yale, was in the Russian youth chorus. They went to Russia in the 50s when we considered Russia totally our enemy.
Right.
And I reminded Phil that while he was talking about the Russian tour that he did with the youth orchestra, that Firesign had written a song called Communist Love Song, in which he talks about falling in love with a Russian communist girl. And he went, oh, my God, we've got to put that in the book. He has written so much material
yeah.
that he forgot what he had done, yeah. and I got to remind him.
That's great. Okay, Brad, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Brad Schreiber is with us. He's the author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. He's the co-author of Where's My Fortune Cookie with the great Phil Proctor from Firesign Theater, and that is a fabulous book. You can check out bradschreiber.com for more information, and there's a link on our Facebook page. More with Brad after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and it is Friday morning, which means all the regular Friday features will be coming up. Fly Jams Friday. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and much more. We're also going to talk about movie continuity errors and big movie mistakes that have been pointed out, and they're really hilarious. And if you've got any, we want you to jump in. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My guest right now is Brad Schreiber, the author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories and More. And he's had a remarkable career, and we welcome Brad back to the show. Brad, welcome back, sir.
I really appreciate it, Nick. I wanted to add just very quickly a very obscure story about Phil Proctor. This is how outrageous those guys were when they started performing. They did a show at Santa Monica Civic Auditorium where they walked through the theater. They didn't start on stage. They walked through the theater, and they got these containers for bug spraying, you know,
yeah.
like exterminators.
Right.
And they had LSD on the side, and they were spraying the people going, we're going to have a great time tonight because we're all high. And, of course, it was nothing but just water.
Right.
But, I mean, that's how outlandish their ideas were as
yeah.
comedians.
It's interesting because when I've had Phil on the show a couple of times, I've had you on the show, and I discovered Firesign Theater right around the same time I discovered Python, and it was like it was monumental for me. You know, looking at that stuff and going, wow, you can do this. That you can do this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, and it was like it changed my perception of comedy completely when, you know, it went Python then Firesign, like neck and neck when I first discovered them, and it
yeah.
at a very young age too, yeah, at an age too young actually, I think, but it had a massive effect on me, and you know, I told Phil that too, and it's yeah, I mean, incredible stuff.
Yeah, well. If you're drawn to something that breaks the rules, then you seek it out.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, the local PBS station, KQED, would run foreign films. And so I was very young when I saw 8 and a Half by Fellini.
Oh, sure.
And I went, wait a minute. This is not a Tony Curtis comedy movie. This is not Doris Day.
Right.
Where's Jack Lemmon? It's got feathers and women and Marcello Mastroianni wielding a whip. What's going on here?
Yeah,
I kind of like it. It's not just because of the women and the feathers.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it because it broke rules about narrative.
You know, I want to get back. You mentioned the book Stop the Show, A History of Insane Incidents and Absurd Accidents in the Theater. I did theater here in Chicago for over 15 years, and both on stage and directing, and some of the things that happen during live performances are astonishing. Very quickly, we did a show that I wrote and was in, and I co-wrote and I directed it and I was in it. It was called Here Comes a Regular, and it took place in a bar, and it was about these five guys who get together to console a guy who's just broken up with his girlfriend. And we had some people in the audience. The set itself was a fantastic set, and it was a bar, and people actually thought that that was the bar to sit at before you walked into the theater. That's how good the set was. So we had some people in the audience, and they had seen the show before and they loved it. It was like four guys, and they came in and they saw it for the second time, and they wanted the seats reserved, so they reserved seats for them because it was general admission. And they clearly had been drinking before the show, and they brought in like big bottles of red wine. And at one point in the show, and this was a very small theater, and in fact it was so small that pretty much the entire theater was lit. Like, you could see the audience was lit, and we could see him from on stage, like, clearly. And so this guy sitting in the third row, he passes out during the show, and we notice, like, he's asleep. He wakes up, makes a spectacle of himself, vomits all over himself, climbs over the people in the rows in front of him, staggers across the stage, goes through what would be the entrance of the bar, and where the bathrooms, the actual bathrooms in the theater were, and went back there, and then all hell broke loose. People were like, oh, we can get up and just do anything? And it was one of those things, but here's the thing, Brad, here's the thing that came out of that, and I don't want to pat myself on the back, but when the guy came out and walks across the stage, would vomit all over him, staggers out the front door, I said to the actor playing the bartender, I said, man, you really overserved him. So we got a laugh out of it. We got a laugh out of it, which was good.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I did stop the show. Actually, that came out of seeing a friend of mine named Cyril in a play in San Francisco, a farce by Terrence McNally called Noon, where all these people respond to a personals ad. So Cyril is like 5'4", chubby, very hairy, about 50, balding, and he's wearing a leather S&M outfit. Looks like S&M Lederhosen.
Right.
And what he does... And he's a character in this play, and my girlfriend and I are going to see him backstage after, you know, and say, hey, nice job. The problem is he's running around, and one of his testicles pops out of his little leather brief, and he doesn't know it. So the audience is now laughing, and Cyril, not knowing what's going on, is thinking he's a Brit. Oh, I'm really killing them tonight.
Right.
Good God, I'm funny.
Right.
And and the more he jumps around, the more it bounces around like a piñata. And I said to my girlfriend, oh, my God, we cannot go backstage
right.
and tell him how great he was.
Yeah.
And B, why don't I do a book of nothing but insane real-life stories that show what actors and directors have to go through when things go wrong in live theater.
Yeah.
And I only wish I had known you so I could have included your great story. Maybe we'll do an updated version.
Well, I want to hear more of these stories, though, Brad, but I can give you another one really quickly. We did a show here called White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. Which was about as offensive as you can possibly get. I directed the show, and it was about 75 minutes long, and it was written as a two act, but I made it a one act because I said nobody's going to come back for the second act. Because within 5 minutes, the vulgarities go flying, the tasteless jokes, all kinds of bodily fluid. It is as tasteless as you can possibly get. So, for some reason, some people decided that they were offended with about 15 minutes left in the show. And so there's a scene where the pastor who is, you know, overseeing the wedding, and now they're in the reception area, is guzzling a big jug of Jack Daniels, and he's just drinking it. And while this is happening, these three people get up, and it's, again, this small theater, they get up and they start to walk out, and they have to cross the front of the theater, cross the front of the house to do the front of the stage to do it. So he starts to do that, and the actor playing the reverend stops drinking and looks as they walk past him and they're walking out, and he goes, "You're going to miss the cutting of the effing cake," as they walked. Which was just brilliant piece of improvisation, but what was fascinating to me was within 5 minutes they should have been offended. I don't know why they sat there for an hour. It made no sense. Sometimes the audience is just baffled me. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe it just built up. They're disgust built up.
That might be what it was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Melinda Peterson, who is Phil Proctor's wife, gave me a story. She was in a play in Troy, New York, and it was incredibly hot. It was during the summer, and it was bad air conditioning, and she was playing a woman who is blind. And what happens is she gets a nosebleed because it's so hot. And the audience can see it, and she's trying to stifle the bleeding while pretending to be blind. And finally, the bleeding is so bad that a stage manager puts his hands between two flats and holds out a Kleenex magically. And she wants to play the reality of being blind, so she pretends to just casually reach out and go, oh, a Kleenex.
That's...
And staunches the bleeding and plays the rest of the play that is... she's blind.
God, that's funny. So, that is so, yeah. So funny. And then, you know,
We're theater vets. I mean, we see these things when we attend, even if we're not involved in the production.
Oh, yeah.
We see how people have to cover during mishaps. It's amazing.
How did the did she say how the audience reacted to it? Did they laugh or?
Oh, of course they laughed because they knew. But the audience also implicitly understands that, well, the show must go on. Stop the Show's the name of the book.
Yeah.
And the way, like, even the small things that aren't funny, like, I see a lot of theater here in Los Angeles, and when an actor drops a prop and continues talking, I'm fascinated to see how they're going to incorporate picking it up. Because it's a safety issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, they want to pick it up, not immediately, because then it looks like a mishap. They want to pick it up when it's motivated by what they're doing or what they're talking about on stage.
Right.
And that intrigues me, not only covering up when, you know, a piece of property lands on your head, but also the small things and doing it in character.
Now, the unbelievable theater story, one of my favorite theater stories of all time, which involves Peter O'Toole and Richard Harris. Do you know this?
Which one?
Because these, you know, those get, well, they were in a play. I don't remember. Richard Harris told this story on Letterman years ago. And what happened was they were in a play together, and there was a period of time where they weren't on stage for a while, and then they didn't have to come back for the second act. So in the first act, they're out a little bit early, so they've got some time. So every night, they would go to the pub next door, and they would just hammer down. They would just hammer down drinks. The whole time during intermission, and then they would get back in time for their entrances in the second act, at the beginning of the second act. So one night they got particularly, you know, sloshed during their little break, during the break and during the intermission, and the stage manager had to run into the pub and get them, because of course everybody knew where they were. They knew that O'Toole and Harris were in the pub, and so the stage manager comes busting into the pub and says, "You guys are on. You're going to miss your entrance. We're starting the show. You're going to miss your entrance." And so they finish their drinks, of course, because they're not going to waste them. So they finish their drinks, and they run in and go into the theater. So meanwhile, the audience is just kind of waiting for the entrance at this point. And so all of a sudden, there's a big, you can hear foots running through the stage, and the first person who has to enter is Richard Harris. So Richard Harris busts through the door, is staggering all over the place, and slides, falls off the stage and into the lap of a woman in the front row. And the woman in the front row says, "Oh my God, Richard Harris is drunk." And Richard Harris says, "If you think I'm drunk, wait till you see O'Toole's entrance." Wait till you see O'Toole's entrance.
Oh,
it's the best theater. It's my favorite theater story of all time. I got
Yeah, well, that's why I did it. And then Stop the Show breaks it down into, you know, things going wrong in terms of lines, props, the audience getting into fights. You know, remember Cats? I thought Cats was a terrible idea for a musical, but it was incredibly successful.
Yeah.
And what they would do is during the intermission, they would start Act Two by all the characters who are dressed like cats slowly walking on stage while the house lights are up, and then everybody'd settle in their seats, and then they'd start.
Yeah.
Well, they'd leave the doors open on the street where the theater was in the theater district, and a homeless woman walks right up the middle row and crawls on stage and starts going, meow, meow. And so none of the actors know what to do. Finally, a stage manager runs, and the homeless woman sees it and starts laughing and runs out a side door and is never caught.
Oh, God, that's
so that's
fantastic.
How they opened Act Two of Cats.
That's how they, fantastic. You know
which
what?
I think is a market improvement. I'm not
I was
a big fan
say,
of Cats.
Man, I can't stand Cats. And I was going to say, Brad, I wish I was at that performance. I may have enjoyed it.
I used to write a column for a paper called Entertainment Today, and when the end of Cats came, I wrote a column called Why I'm Glad Cats Has Finally Closed. Not a great musical, in my view.
Did you get a lot of negative response? Because there are a lot of impassioned Cats fans out there.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, apparently it had more than 9 lives. It's a pretty awful idea, but, you know, a lot of people talk about some of the greatest artists coming up with clunkers like Starlight Express. Can you imagine doing a musical where it's a roller derby? I mean, who comes up with this stuff?
I know. And you know what? I saw that show. I saw Cats. I saw Cats at the Winter Garden in New York, like during its
Winter Garden.
And then I saw Starlight Express in New York as well. And that was the dumbest show. I mean, that was even worse than Cats. And I was like, what is going on with this? There's tracks all over the stage and all over the theater, and these people and there's supposed to be a train. I'm like, what the hell is this? It was just ridiculous. So, yeah, Brad, hang on, okay?
All right.
Okay, Brad Schreiber is with us. He is the author of several books, including the one that we were just talking about, Stop the Show, which is a history of insane incidents and absurd accidents in the theater. And there are a lot of those to talk about. We got more to talk about. We'll talk about some more comedy. And then, like, the book that he's writing right now, we'll get into as well. And we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And we are here until... we're here until 5 a.m. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. But Brad, right now I'm having a great time talking with Brad Schreiber, the author of several books, including What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Humor for Screenplay Stories, and more. Brad, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Nick.
All right. So were there any other, before we jump into another topic, were there any other, like, really memorable, because, I mean, this book's, can you send me a copy of this book, of Stop the Show?
You bet. Yeah. I would be thrilled to. And it was published a while ago. I'm happy to say it's done better than a lot of my books. It's been out, I guess, 12 years, and it's still in print. I guess there are a lot of theater people who like Schadenfreude, they like other people suffering while they read about
their
mishap. That's why I love those stories. They just defy belief, but they've really happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, even my own performing when I had a couple comedy groups in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, we once did a small bar, which is kind of where Robin Williams got his start in the Bay Area. The Holy City Zoo on Clement Street. Mm. And I remember my group was performing, and all of a sudden a drunken guy at the bar starts singing some song he just made of, oh, you gotta take the beets and potatoes in the sack, and you gotta stay up late or you break your mother's back. And he's so loud, and no one will tell him to shut up, and the place only sits about 50 people.
Right.
That we just drop all the written material and we start improvising because we can't get this drunk to shut up.
Yeah.
So we start making up drunken songs. It's just everybody has to deal with that, especially in stand-up. But when it happens in theater, it's remarkable because the actors are not trained to improvise.
Yeah.
They're working off scripts, and the way that they cope with disasters
is
actually a lot more impressive than the way stand-up comedians cope with it.
It's interesting. It really is. So listen, your next book is due out next year, and it's called Music is Power. Give me a quick summation of what it is and how far along you are and when we can look forward to reading that one.
Well, thanks. It's going to be out in November of next year. Rutgers University Press is publishing it, and it's just as it sounds. Music is Power is about the intersection of politics and political change and popular music, starting with Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, going through psychedelic music and comedy records, like the Smothers Brothers, all the way through hip-hop. And tonight I'm doing research on Green Day and their musical American Idiot, which, of course, was in response to 9/11 and the war in Iraq.
Right.
So some of it's comedic, but most of it is about really popular music that, that changed perceptions and in some cases actually changed the law. Remember Phil Oakes, the folk singer, you know, he really motivated a lot of people, and he kind of made Bob Dylan up his game. Or P.F. Sloan, another great example of a guy who wrote the Eve of Destruction that Barry McGuire sang. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. Well, what happened is the 26th Amendment got passed partly due to the influence of that song. Mm. Nixon said, okay, 18-year-olds can now vote. I'm sure he lived to regret that decision.
That's true.
But there's a song, Nick, that actually made political change. So Music is Power is something I'm working on 7 days a week because my deadline's February.
And, okay.
And I'm very proud to do this book with Rutgers.
Well, I'm excited for it, as I am with all of your stuff. Brett, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. I'm wishing you and all Chicagoland very Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah and a Kwesi Kwanzaa.
There you go. Exactly. And a great new year. Same to you, Brad. And thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Always a pleasure, Nick.
Okay, take care. There you go. Brad Schreiber, everybody. A tremendously talented man and a writer, and even more than that. What Are You Laughing At is a book about how to write humor. Where's My Fortune Cookie is a book that he wrote with Phil Proctor from Firesign Theater. And Stop the Show is a history of insane incidents and absurd accidents in the theater. A great guy. So thrilled to talk to that guy. All right, we got a break here. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. That means Fly Jams Friday. Yeah. Wait a minute. What's going on now? Hold on now. Yeah. All right, man. Be playing around. Fly Jams Friday coming up. Straight Out of Context, that's where you listen to this radio station 24/7 whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Also, Nick D Show Spies, that's where you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever I am mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity, we want to know about it. You Become a Spy, jot down all the info, and again, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And You Big Dummy, You Big Dummy is where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on the biggest dummy. And there are a couple ways you can be a part of it. One, if you would like to read a dumb story on the air, find a link to a funny, dumb news story about dumb people and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com along with a note saying, I'd like to read this on the air. Dan will get a hold of you. We'll record it. Not only will you be on the radio and read the read your dumb story, but you will also get some Lou Malnati's pizza. So it's a win-win-win situation. Also, this morning when we read these stories and do a summation and a recap of the five dummy stories, we vote, Dan votes, I vote, and then we take a third vote, and that's the first person who calls at 312-981-7200. First person, 312-981-7200, is our third vote. So that's all coming up. And remember, get your funky requests ready to go for Fly Jams Friday, where we celebrate everything R&B. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And there you go. So, all right. So I had a, by the way, I had a really long, I've had a very, very long day/night. I saw a screening of a much anticipated movie this afternoon, which, of course, ate into my sleep time. And then I decided I may as well just stay down here, downtown, and see a couple of more movies that fill the time in before I have to be here. So I've not slept a lot. I've had So, you know, in a couple hours, I could be completely looped at this point. But earlier today, I saw Welcome to Marwen, which is Robert Zemeckis' new movie starring Steve Carell. And I loved it. I thought it was great. And I'm hearing mixed things about it from people, and I don't understand that. I thought it was great. So that was very exciting. And then I saw this new Spider-Man movie, which I got to say, Into the Spider-Verse, it's called. It's animated, and it's terrific. And every commercial I saw for it, every trailer I saw for it, I was completely underwhelmed. And like, why do we need another Spider-Man movie? And I mean, it's an animated Spider-Man movie that's going to be in a movie theater. Why would I pay money to see this? And then the buzz started to happen. They started screening it, and all the reviews have been amazing. It won the Chicago Film Critic Award for Best Animated Film of the Year. It's nominated for Best Animated Film for the Golden Globes. I think it'll be nominated for the Academy Award for the Best Animated Movie. It's terrific. It's really, really entertaining and exciting and beautifully animated. All kinds of crazy animated styles all thrown into the movie in a great mishmash. Great voice work. Nicolas Cage is hilarious. He plays Spider-Man Noir. The noir Spider-Man, who's all in black and white. It's just great. Haley Steinfeld plays Gwen Stacy, who's Spider-Woman. And it brings all of these, you know, offshoots of Spider-Man over the years together in one universe and mixes them all up. And the villains include Kingpin. The Green Goblin shows up, Scorpion shows up. So there's a lot of, I mean, it's exciting and it's funny and it's actually, you know, there's some emotion in it. It was way, so much better than I had expected it to be. I think it's my second favorite Spider-Man movie of all of them. After Spider-Man 2, which is my favorite. I liked it more than Homecoming. And the thing about it, Dan, I really am curious. You know, I know you'll get around to seeing it at some point. I'm very curious to see what you think of this, you know, because I know Spider-Man's your favorite character.
Right.
And they do some great stuff with it. There's two different Peter Parkers in it. There's Peter Parker, voiced by Chris Pine, and then there's Peter B. Parker, who is voiced by Jake Johnson. And they're from different dimensions. Have you heard of it? Is this a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So you know all about this. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so have they all been together in anything?
You know, they've crossed paths. I don't know if it, to the extent of the film where there's so many all together. But yeah, usually
that's the whole,
once a year there's somebody else from a different thing.
What they do is every time they introduce a new Spider-Man or a Spider-Person, they give their history. And like their origin, so everybody gets another origin, and so right, the first one who gives an origin is Peter Parker. It's the Chris Pine character, and right at the top of the movie they go, all right, yeah, okay, we're gonna go through this one more time, and so they're acknowledging that, right, we've seen the origin 8,000 times, and everybody knows, you know, he goes, I've done this, I was this, and my uncle died, and y'all know that, and that changed everything, you know, great power lies great responsibility, and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And they're actually, like, just kind of going through it quickly, really sarcastically. Like, everybody in the audience has heard it before, and we don't want to hear it again. And if we do want to hear it again, we want to hear it in a funny and creative way. And at one point, it's so hilarious. At one point, they're, like, going through sort of the, and very quickly, cutting through some of the memories that we all know from the Spider-Man movies in the past. And one of them says, and he's in his spider, he's in the Spider-Man suit the whole time. He's never like in street clothes as Peter Parker. All of the flashbacks are in the Spider-Man costume. And at one point he goes, and he goes, I did this, and I saved this person, and I saved that person. And then one time I did this, and they show him dancing down the street to Stayin' Alive. But in the Spider-Man costume, you're like dancing, doing the whole thing. You're like a couple of quick shot for shots of what Raimi shot in that. And he goes, but we don't want to talk about that right now. That's the opening. Like, that's the opening moment of the movie, and it just gets more clever from there. And, it's really terrific. And I went, you know, since I was down here, I went to Navy Pier and saw it in IMAX, in IMAX 3D. That was fun. That was an expensive ticket. I didn't know how much, I forgot how much it cost to go to IMAX. Navy Pier is more expensive than like regular IMAX. Like a few bucks more expensive. But it was fun and it was great, and there was a very enthusiastic crowd. You know, cuz the movie technically opens today. So, but people at a 7 o'clock showing at the Navy Pier IMAX are excited about the movie. And clearly people who know the stories and know the legends and all that stuff, and every sort of joke that maybe I didn't quite get because I don't know the characters, people around me were just happy as hell. It got applause at the end of the movie. And I had to split to see another movie, so I don't know if there's a postscript, but I plan on seeing the movie. I mean, I assume there's a postscript, but it's from... it's from Sony. It's not Marvel Studios. So maybe there's not a postscript?
They're, you know, with their relationship now, I think it's one of those things where there might be, just because,
yeah,
you know, Marvel has a big hand. Even though it's, you know, Sony still owns the rights, Marvel's got a big hand,
yeah,
in the,
yeah,
production.
But anyway, I am definitely going to see it again because it's that entertaining. It really is. And it's really one of the most, you know, nicest surprises of the year was this movie. A movie that I had no intention of caring about. You know what I mean? It's like, oh God, another Spider-Man movie. It's animated. That should have probably gone straight to video. That's what was in my head. It's great. It's really, really, really terrific. And I can't wait to talk to some of the Spider-Man fans. My Mr. Scott Oaken will be seeing it this afternoon, and I told him, I was like, you have to see this. So he will let me know what he thinks of it. He's a big comic book guy. Spider-Man is like way up on his list of favorite characters too. Yeah, and wonderful voice work. And I'm telling you, Nicolas Cage is hilarious in it. Absolutely hilarious. You know who's even funny in it? John Mulaney. He plays the Spider-Ham? The pig?
Yeah, Spider-Pig.
Spider-Pig, yeah. So he plays... And that's a really funny character, like a cartoon character that pulls out a big mallet and it's good. It's really, really, really good. But I had to leave because I had another movie to see, and it wasn't at Navy Pier. I had to go to the River East to see it. And I saw Mortal Engines, which is, you know, they say it's from the filmmakers of Lord of the Rings, but it's not. You know, it's like executive produced by Peter Jackson. And shockingly, Hugo Weaving plays a villain in it. I don't know why they thought that would be good casting. But for those of you who don't know who Hugo Weaving is, he's Agent Smith from The Matrix, and he plays a lot. He didn't play a villain in the Lord of the Rings movies, but he's played a lot of villains, most notably Agent Smith in The Matrix. And so he plays a villain, and it's got some really cool special effects, some good fight scenes, but it's too long, and two, I just didn't care. It was like all spectacle that I didn't care about, and it was just kind of, I mean, the plot itself was kind of dumb. It was just dumb. And I saw it right after Spider-Man. So like I saw Welcome to Marwen, which I think is one of the best movies of the year. Then I see Spider-Man, which I think is maybe won't make my top 10, but it'll be up there. And then this thing, unfortunately, was the third movie I saw, you know, after No Sleep. So it didn't hold up very well. But we'll give you full reviews on Monday. Monday morning is going to be a busy morning for the movie reviews for Colin and Jim. Colin and Nick. See, I'm telling you, I'm going to be gone by 4:30. Colin and Eric. It's going to be long. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. My parents and I are going to see the Clint Eastwood movie tomorrow, The Mule, which I'm hearing good things about as well, like really good things. So yeah, you know, it's been short for the past couple of weeks, the movie review segment. Dan's been short. It's not going to be short Monday.
Saving it all up for this week.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what I did with my afternoon into my evening. And I will now tell you, I was teasing yesterday about who I was going to interview. Patty Vasquez and I are going to interview a certain person. And I teased it yesterday morning that I'm really ridiculously excited about it. This is a person that I adore, whose work I so admire that it's sick. And we are going to have him in studio. And Patty and I are going to interview him together. And Patty and I went to see the movie together this afternoon. And that would be Robert Zemeckis. So we're going to, oh my God, we're going to interview Robert Zemeckis. And I'm beside myself. We're going to run the interview next week, either Tuesday or Wednesday, because the film opens next Friday. It opens a week from today. Welcome to Marwen. And it's brilliant. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie and brilliantly made. And I can't wait. I'm going to meet him. I'm going to get to talk to him. Patty and I are going to interview him. I'm going to be a total dork and get a picture with him. But yes, I get to interview Robert Zemeckis. And I'm just beside myself. He's one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, one of the greatest American directors that's ever lived, who's directed several masterpieces. Not one in his career, several. And his latest movie is Welcome to Marwen, with Steve Carell, based on the true story. And it's a lovely, lovely movie and just great. And again, just shows off the enormous amount of talent that Robert Zemeckis has. And we will run that interview on our show sometime next week, either Tuesday or Wednesday. And Patty is going to run it on her show as well. So anyway, it was very exciting to see the movie today, and it's going to be very exciting to interview Robert Zemeckis. So get ready for me to sound like a complete nerd. So, yeah, Robert Zemeckis will be on the show next week. That's all I'm saying. So, okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about continuity errors in movies, mistakes in movies. That never happens in Robert Zemeckis movies, as far as I'm concerned. Even if there are continuity errors in any of his movies, he wasn't responsible for them because the man's a genius. But anyway, do you guys have any of your favorites? If you've watched a movie and you see continuity errors, you know, like a cigarette is this long in one shot and then the ash is longer in the other shot, or the drink that's on the table is three quarters full and then it cuts to a different angle and it's a third full, that kind of stuff. But even bigger ones. I mean, there are some really big, ridiculous continuity and movie mistakes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we'll jump into that. And I want to hear from you both, talk and text. Yeah. So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 o'clock. And we're about to jump into a... By the way, it's Friday, so that means all the Friday features are coming up. Get your Fly Jam requests ready to go. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. But right now, we're going to talk about the worst continuity mistakes in movie history and some of the worst movie mistakes of all time. And if you have some that stand out for you, like really dumb mistakes or continuity errors that are just ridiculous, 312-981-7200. You know, years ago, I believe someone wrote us, you know, like a paperback on this, like a small book, like maybe a 50-60 page book on some of them, with pictures of some of these errors. And the title of the book was Spartacus Wears a Watch, or something along those lines, because I guess one of the cast members in Spartacus, which is obviously a period piece, had a wristwatch on, you know, like and that tends to take you out of it. And this, the first one that I want to mention here is that there's, in The Lord of the Rings, there's apparently a car in Middle Earth. And I've seen the movies a bunch of times. Director Peter Jackson used all his filmic ability and Weta's CGI wizardry to take audiences into the bowels of Middle Earth for his Lord of the Rings trilogy. While it was a masterful illusion overall, not even the notoriously perfectionist could emerge with a film that was completely error-free. The gaffe in question takes place during a pivotal scene between Sam and Frodo, with Sam noting that the two hobbits have traveled the furthest they've ever been from their homes in their lives. Following this, you can see the glint of a car driving in the background of the shot. A car in Middle Earth, man. I don't know. Another Lord of the Rings continuity mistake worth noting occurs during the second half of The Return of the King, where Frodo Baggins, his newfound scar moves around to multiple facial locations for no explanation. So his scar moves around. Well, it did take him like 3 years to shoot the damn thing. They probably forgot where they put the... And they didn't shoot it in complete order. So they probably forgot where they put the scar. So there's a scar moving around on Frodo's face, and there's a car driving around in Middle Earth. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about. This is exactly the kind of stuff we're talking about. Big movie mistakes and movie continuity errors. All right, jump in here if you've got a favorite that you've noticed. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. All right, the news is coming up next, and then we'll jump into more movie mistakes and continuity errors. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Hope everybody's doing well. It's Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. And, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. We are talking about bad movie mistakes, ridiculous continuity errors that are fun to spot and fun to watch. How about this? This is a great one. Dan, this is a great one. The fake baby in American Sniper. This is one of the funniest ones of all time. American Sniper features an error so embarrassing it's shocking that it made the final cut, but we're glad it did because it's hilarious. In the scene, Chris Kyle, played by Bradley Cooper, is seen bonding with his infant child. What should have been a touching moment is laughable because he's clearly holding a plastic doll. So why did director Clint Eastwood sign off on a baby doll for the pivotal scene? Necessity, the real baby that they had intended to use, was sick with a fever. And Clint, by the way, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the way Clint Eastwood works, he's got a movie coming out. He did a movie coming out today called The Mule, which is getting some good reviews. The guy's like 87 years old, and he still makes at least one movie, sometimes two movies a year. This is the first movie he's acted in a long time. He's been directing a lot, but he's been behind the camera a lot. I can't remember the last movie he acted in. Dan, can you look it up? It wasn't Million Dollar Baby, was it? Was it Million Dollar Baby, maybe? Clint likes to work fast. Clint's one of these guys.
Trouble with the Curve.
Oh, right. Trouble with the Curve. Yeah. Clint is one of these guys is like, all right, we're going to do one take and that's it. Because he wants to get to the golf course. That's what they all say, that like working with Clint Eastwood, he's a one take guy. He works as fast as he possibly can and wants to have the shortest work days possible for everybody, including the crew.
Plus, you know, just the era he's from, the work ethic, you know, for an actor to call off sick because of a fever.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so funny because this scene, Vic, have you seen American Sniper?
Yeah, but I didn't catch it.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? You can,
first time hearing about it.
You can Google it. You could just Google American Sniper baby scene and you'll be able to see it because it's kind of one of the most ridiculous and kind of legendary movie mistakes of all time.
Wow.
And I guess Clint's direction was because, you know, it was just a doll. And I guess Clint said, move your hands around so it looks like it's moving. So it looks like the baby's moving. And you could totally tell that Bradley Cooper's doing that. You know, some of these errors you don't notice right away. And maybe you didn't notice it. You know, obviously you've seen the film, but you didn't notice it. But go back and now you'll never not notice it. You know what I mean? Like you'll never, I got one from a Zemeckis movie. I got one from a Zemeckis movie, Back to the Future Part 3, and I pointed this out when we screened it last September. At the end of the movie, at the very end of the movie, when Doc and his family, his wife and now his three kids, come back from the time machine, they go back to the future to see Jennifer and Marty on the train now that has become a flying time machine. They come back And the little kid, there's like a toddler kid, and then like maybe a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. The little kid is looking directly into the camera and like making ridiculous faces and doing stuff with his fingers. Now he's in the background of the shot, so you don't really notice it. But if you, this one's online too. You can see this. Dan, have you ever seen this one?
Yeah, I have seen it.
It's fantastic. So I mean, this kid is just going, he's making ridiculous faces. He's looking directly into the camera. I'm going to ask Zemeckis about this. But yeah, so that's that. And so what I did was at the Movie Co. or at the AMC Rosemont when we were during our Zemeckis Fest, and I showed Back to the Future Part 3, I was like, make sure you watch the young kid at the end of the movie. At the end of the movie, the audience just burst out laughing because here's this kid going, making weird faces right into the camera and hamming it up. He's not the focus of the scene, so, you know. And it's actually a really sweet moment between Doc and Marty, you know, and so here's this kid going, blah, 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 blah. It's very funny. It's very, very funny. By the way, I'm not going to bring that up when I talk to Zemeckis because I don't want him to leave. I want as much time with Robert Zemeckis as I can possibly have. All right, here's Steve in Galesburg on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Close Encounters, when Richard Dreyfuss gets in a station wagon to leave California, when he gets to Wyoming and they see the cows from the anthrax threat,
yeah,
he's got Wyoming plates on the wagon.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I didn't know. I've never noticed that. And I've seen Close Encounters like 5,000 times, and I've never noticed
that. I didn't notice it. My late uncle had noticed it, that bugged him forever. He noticed it at the theater when it came out.
Yeah, wow. I didn't notice it. I've seen that movie. Seriously, I've seen that movie so many times. I'm going to have to look for it. That gives me another excuse to watch it, Steve.
Okay.
All right, take care. I love that movie so much. All right, we got some texts here coming in. 231 area code says, in a Whoopi Goldberg movie, I think it was Jumpin' Jack Flash, she left a restaurant in a Chevy Caprice taxi cab and arrived home in a Ford LTD cab. Maybe they stopped off somewhere. She had to go to an ATM or something, and the cabbie left, and she had to get a different cab. Mark, the bread man, says, being a huge Star Wars nerd, my favorite movie mistake is when the stormtrooper bumps his head. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's classic. That's classic. Don't, yeah. That I can't believe what it did. You mean George Lucas didn't clean it up when they re-released it? He didn't fix that? Pat from Joliet says, a continuity mistake I remember is from Stripes. When Bill Murray, yeah, this is so true. When Bill Murray is trying to leave the base in the middle of the night, he's stopped by Harold Ramis. Murray's duffel bag moves around in several shots. Yeah, it's under his head at one point. Also, his hat is on his head, and it's off his head. Yeah, that's a big, I mean, I remember that big time. The duffel bag moves, it's under his head, then it's not under his head. He's got a hat on, he doesn't have a hat on. Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. All within one scene, different takes. That's funny.
I was watching something on Netflix recently, and I caught a mistake. It was tiny, so I can't believe I missed the baby, but I caught this. You'll get it after I tell you, because it's a tiny mistake, but I caught it. It's right at the beginning of the movie, I think it's called Beirut, with John Hamm.
And, yeah, Beirut, yeah.
Okay, so it's near the beginning of the film. Because I know I fell asleep and I didn't finish it, so it was probably first 15 minutes. He's kind of working the crowd at this gathering in Beirut. You know, he's kind of playing politics, and the camera angle is right behind a gentleman's head, and he's taking up most of the screenshot. And then to the left of the screen, you can see the character that John Hamm's playing. He's speaking to this back of this head, right? And so the guy's head moves, and across the room, because you're just staring at the back of this guy's head, and so when he moves, you see this woman across the room, an extra, staring at the camera, and she looks away quickly.
That's hilarious.
And they left that in, you know. Yeah, I noticed that, it.
That's funny. I think it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. Dan, I think it's Raiders of the Lost Ark, or one of, it's Raiders, when Harrison Ford and Karen Allen are in the town square. Like, right before they try to kidnap her, you know the scene I'm talking about where they've got the monkey, where the monkey is running around with them? There's a dude who I guess didn't know that they were filming a scene, and he's in regular, he's in like street clothes, like 1980s street clothes. And I think he's got a walkie-talkie. He's like a guy who's working on the set. He's in the background of the shot. You can see him walk. You can see him walking through the background of the shot, wearing like modern-day clothes. I think he had a walkie-talkie. He was like a guy, a crew person. He just walks through the back of the shot. It's obviously that's a period film. So, how about this one? Spider-Man self-repairing windows. One of the most iconic scenes in Sam Raimi's smash hit adaptation of a Marvel Comics' favorite web-slinger is a scene from Spider-Man kissing Mary Jane upside down in the rain. While the romantic chemistry between Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst is palpable, there is a major... By the way, they do that joke like three times in the new Spider-Man movie. They make reference to that like three times. It's hysterical. Every time it's funny. Every time it gets a laugh. There is a major continuity goof that distracts from the moment. You see, just prior to the couple's lip lock, Spider-Man had saved Mary Jane from some attackers in an alleyway, chucking them through a set of windows in the process. Yet during the kiss, we see the windows shown behind Mary Jane, and they're perfectly intact. Luckily, the film flies by at such a pleasant, engaging pace that we can forgive the error, but we're still agitated with the dorky Green Goblin mask. Yeah. How about this? Pulp Fiction, bullet holes. Quentin Tarantino is known for the non-linear narrative structure of his films. While his plot constructions are undeniably clever, telling a story out of order can make it challenging in regards to continuity. It can be more confusing from a production standpoint than traditional linear films, which inevitably will lead to mistakes. Take this early scene in Pulp Fiction where Jules, Samuel Jackson, and Vincent, John Travolta, successfully dodge gunfire. The proof being that the bullet holes are in the wall behind them. The problem is that the bullet holes were already present in an earlier shot. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and get more of these. We got a ton more here, and I know you guys have some, too. We're talking about movie continuity errors or movie mistakes that are just ridiculous and hilarious. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Friday.
Yeah!
So that means Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies. You Big Dummy. All coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Having some fun this morning talking about movie mistakes and huge continuity errors, or even small ones that you've noticed. And some of the classic ones, like the stormtrooper bumping his head. I had totally forgotten about that one. That's a classic one. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
I was calling about a scene from Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Uh-huh.
He gets in a car chase, and the car he's chasing is a yellow Porsche.
Yes.
And the thing wrecks, and it's on its side, and at the end of the scene, he's with Ray Dong Chong, and he pushes it over,
mm-hmm.
and then you see it's all beat up, and then when he drives off, it's in perfect condition.
That's right. It's right, because I think and also the windshield was smashed at one point, and then it wasn't.
Yeah.
They would cut back and forth, yeah. and it was
Yep.
Yeah, that's a classic. Commando. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Wait, here we go. Oh, no, here we go. I got it right in front of me here, Mark. Here's what they say about it. It's on a website here. It says, continuity mistake. After chasing down Sully, the yellow Porsche is totally wrecked on the left side until Arnie drives away, and then it's fine. Later, when Arnie and Cindy arrive at the hotel, the car is wrecked again.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. All right, good one, Mark.
All right.
See you, bye.
Yeah.
How about this one, the changing weather in Blade Runner? Ridley Scott's 1982 sci-fi film Blade Runner is now regarded as one of the best science films of its genre. Yes, it is. It's renowned for its amazing visual effects and strong performances, both of which help it to overcome many continuity errors. Take the scene where replicant Zora, played by Joanna Cassidy, is retired by Rick Deckard, played by Harrison Ford, leading to too many close-up shots of her stunt double who looks nothing like her. Now, I agree with that. Now, Dan, here's one that they you know, there's approximately 37 different versions of Blade Runner. You know what I'm saying? There's like 19 different director's cuts. There's, you know, the studio cut, the unrated cut. Well, when they in 1993 is when they released the cut, the director's cut, and then they released it again in the late 90s with more stuff that that Ridley Scott went in and fixed. And in that one, he digitally put Joanna Cassidy's face over the stunt woman's body, who was running through the glass as Deckard is shooting her from behind. So depending on what version you get, depending on what version you're watching, and like I said, there's about 14,000 different versions of Blade Runner, and by the way, they're all good. Let me just say that. They're all good. You may or may not see Joanna Cassidy look like Joanna Cassidy when she's being retired. Or the fact that Deckard is hired to take out 5 replicants and yet the film only features 4. Or how about the film's most celebrated scene where doomed replicant Roy Batty, played by Rutger Hauer, dies during an evening downpour only to release a pair of doves into an inexplicably clear sunny sky. Well, you know, personally, I think that's a choice. I don't care about continuity there at that point. I think that's a beautiful moment. That's one of the greatest. Rutger Hauer wrote that monologue. Tears in the Rain. That's Rutger Hauer, man. So when he releases those doves and they cut to a sunny sky, I think that's a choice. So no, that's I personally think Ridley Scott made that choice to you know, I don't know. It's such a beautiful image with the sun instead of the rain. I don't know. And it's still, when they cut back to Harrison Ford, it's raining on him. I will admit that. He's sitting on the roof, and it is still raining on him, but I don't care. I love that moment. I love that shot of that of the doves with the sun. Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick. My favorite feature, I wish I could get that option, was the unlimited hubcap option on the Charger from the Bullet movie. When Steve McQueen's chasing him, he never runs out of hubcaps.
Yeah, and isn't there, and Rich, isn't there a VW bug that shows up like in like
every hill?
Yeah, like he
gets passed about 37 times, I think.
I forgot about the hubcaps. I never thought about the hubcaps, but that's hilarious. But I do remember the VW. Yeah. I do remember the bug being passed a bunch of times in that car chase.
Right. Every time you see the Charger turn the steering wheel, he loses a front hubcap and then a back hubcap, and then they lose them again. So it was it was only an option on that year of Charger.
I got unlimited it. Hubcap. Yeah, the unlimited hubcaps option. That's great.
Yeah, check that with
Tom.
What's his
yeah,
name?
Tom Appel.
Yeah.
All right, Rich. Thanks.
And then another one I noticed that I bring up to my wife and it drives her crazy is like on all the Chicago series, Fire. You know,
yeah,
they've got Illinois plates on the cars. They're completely accurate except for they got California numbers on them.
Oh, okay. That doesn't make any sense.
No, they're fake. Well, I mean, they're fake license plates.
Well, sure,
of course.
Yeah, of course.
But they're completely accurate down to the hologram of Lincoln in the middle of them.
Yeah.
But they've got, like, the Illinois or California-style numbers on them.
Yeah, well, you know why? Because the people who probably did the production design are from California. That's probably why they did that.
As Dan knows, I was watching a Hallmark movie. A Veterans Christmas. It's set in a hypothetical Illinois town.
Yeah,
and they've got the same Illinois plates with California numbers on them.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that's just a
even
thing.
Even the cop cars have the MP on it for municipal police for the town cops.
Yeah,
but they've got the California style numbers.
Wow. All right.
And I point that out to my wife. She always just tells me to shut up.
Yeah,
and watch the program.
All right, Rich. Thanks, man.
Yep. Have a good evening.
Okay. Here's Squat on WGN. Hey, Squat.
Hey, Nick. Good show. Has any director that you know of used continuity mistakes? Just put his stamp on his films, you know, like on purpose to do that?
I don't think anybody, I don't think somebody would do that purposely. I think a lot of continuity errors happen either because they weren't noticed. I don't think anybody does it on purpose as some sort of stylistic choice. But I think they either nobody noticed or they had no other take that they had that they could use. That's another reason why some directors shoot take after take after take, so that if there are mistakes, they could use a different take to make it match more. But I wouldn't say that anybody, like a director, would actually purposely do that. That's just me. But yeah, it's mostly because people miss them, or that's the take that they have to go with. Or, when they were shooting it, the person who's supposed to watch continuity didn't do their job. So, or if you're Clint Eastwood, one take, I have to golf. I'm going to watch for continuity errors tomorrow when I go see The Mule, the whole movie. I'm just going to be watching. How much money is in that satchel? How much dope is in that bag? That's what I'm going to, and I'm going to count every brick of heroin. All right. Squat, thanks for the call. We got a break. The news is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio and here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And, yeah. So, it's Friday morning. Fly Jam Friday is coming up. And get your requests ready to go. Our regular features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spy, and You Big Dummy, all coming up. We've been talking about movie continuity mistakes, some of the funniest ones, some of the biggest movie mistakes and continuity errors of all time. 312-981-7200 if you've got some. Here's another one from Raiders of the Lost Ark. It happens during the Well of Souls scene where Indy falls into a pit of cobras, one of which stares straight into his face. To make this shot happen without risk of injury to Harrison Ford, a thick glass pane separated the two. In the theatrical cut of the film, you can clearly see the snake's reflection in the pane of glass. If you watch it now, however, you won't see it because Spielberg caught the error and made sure to fix it when it was released on DVD. But if you have a chance to watch the old VHS editions or the original theatrical cut, in all its flawed reflective glory, you can see the reflecting cobra. Okay. Oh, here's one. Man, they're going to call out my man John Carpenter on this one. Halloween. John Carpenter's Halloween helped popularize the slasher genre and make Jamie Lee Curtis a star in the process. That being said, its low-budget, rushed shooting schedule led to some memorable errors. Take the scene where Curtis's character, Laurie Strode, looks behind a shrub to see if a masked killer is hiding behind the shrub. Or is hiding there. That's actually, but first of all, whoever wrote this got this detail wrong. It's Nancy Loomis' character who goes to check behind the bush. So it's Nancy Loomis' character. Trust me, I've seen this movie a couple times. Jamie Lee Curtis stays back on the sidewalk, and Nancy Loomis goes behind the shrub and to see if he's there. But actually, yes, this continuity error is there. This mistake is there. To see if the mass killer, Michael Myers, is hiding there, and you can see a puff of John Carpenter's cigarette smoke blowing into the shot. Because he never stops smoking, John Carpenter. Or the fact that every car has California license plates, even though the film is set in the fictional town of Haddonfield, Illinois, but it was shot in Southern California. There's another element that dispels the illusion that Halloween takes place, the movie takes place in the Midwest, the occasional palm tree sticking out in the background, including a scene where Laurie tries to calm young Tommy Doyle's pre-Halloween night jitters. Yeah, palm trees are, you can see in the background there, and as we all know, we don't have palm trees in Illinois. So, but we also don't have a Haddonfield in Illinois. There is no Haddonfield, Illinois. It's Haddonfield. I can't remember what state. It's the town where the Deborah Hill, the producer, was born. Haddonfield. It's a different state, though. It's not Illinois, but they just use the name because that's where Deborah Hill was born, or she grew up, or something like that. How about The Wizard of Oz? Not even one of the greatest cinematic classics of all time is immune to the occasional flub. Hard to believe The Wizard of Oz has a sizable amount of continuity errors. Perhaps the most notorious involves the follicles of Judy Garland, forever immortalized for her portrayal of Dorothy from Kansas. And it happens during a pivotal scene where she first meets the Scarecrow. During their musical number together, she appears with pigtails just above her shoulders. Then, as the song progresses, they grow longer. At one point, they're even below her shoulders. Yet when the song concludes, they're back to their original length. I guess they shot that. She got a haircut in between the time they finished shooting that or something. Other notable errors include Dorothy's losing her ruby slippers for black ones during one shot, characters switching position with no regard to prior placement, and chandelier candles that magically relight themselves. This is one of my favorites, North by Northwest. Do you know this one, Dan?
Yeah, I have heard this.
This is one of my favorites. By the way, we're showing North by Northwest at my film club in a few months. We're going to be showing North by Northwest on the big screen at my film club. In the scene, Cary Grant is confronted by Eva Marie Saint near Mount Rushmore, and he discovers that the woman he's falling in love with just might not be who she seems. During a confrontation, she shoots him point blank with a gun. Apparently, the young boy in the background was extra sensitive to loud noises and had likely was tired of the multiple takes, because you can clearly see him putting his fingers in his ear before the gun was even shot. And that's the take that's in the movie. If you watch that, if you watch North by Northwest, watch the kid. He's sitting at a table, and you can watch him. He brings his fingers up, puts his fingers in his ear before the gun is shot. That's a classic one. All right, how about this one? Shrek. Sometimes Shrek's front door opens outwards. Other times it's inwards. Yet it can't be two way because whenever it closes, it slams against the frame. Jeez, man. Oh, man, that's some serious watching right there. How about this? Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen. When Michaela and Sam are on the phone with each other, while they're on the phone, Wheelie starts reaching up for the safe combination lock in the first shot. There are no mouse traps on the floor near the short stool to his left, nor are there any cigar boxes. However, in the next shot, two mouse traps and two cigar boxes have suddenly appeared. Wheelie proceeds to step on the two traps and then stands on the boxes to reach the combination lock. Seriously, somebody's watching a Transformers movie that closely? I spend most of my time when I'm watching a Transformers movie looking at my watch. That's what I watch the most. The usual suspects. Right before they rob the police car, a Boeing 747 with four engines is seen in shots of the plane coming into land. When the plane is shown from behind, it's a Boeing 767 with only two engines and fewer man landing gears. And that happens at, if you want to know, that happens at 30 minutes and 10 seconds into the movie. In case you want to spot it, you might want to mark these down. How about this one? P.S. I love you. After Jerry gets smacked in the face by the broken suspender clasp, we see the silver clasp land under the dresser. Yet, while he's moaning and lifting his leg to get into bed, we can see that the clasp is still intact on the front suspender that came loose. It's dangling right in front of him. Of course, in the next shot, the clasp is gone. Since the silver clasp is one of the plot points of the movie, this is bizarre to say the least. That happens 11 minutes and 10 seconds into the movie, everybody. Minority Report. In the beginning, when Anderton arrests the jealous husband, he notes that he is being arrested on April 22nd, that day, for the future murder of his wife and her lover. Later, while Anderton is jogging, we see billboards advocating a yes vote on pre-crime on April 22nd. The next day, Anderton's boss, Lamar, notes that the vote is in a week, making it April 15th. Making the day that the jealous husband was arrested April 14th, not April 22nd. My God. All right. What else we got here? Spider-Man, another Spider-Man one from the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man. We already had the windows that fixed themselves. Now we got, when Norman is getting ready to test himself, he lies down on the bed, fastens himself in, and the doctor goes on the computer. However, when it shows him being brought into the chamber, he has several electrodes connected to his chest and head. That's a when Willem Dafoe is on the board there. He has suddenly there's electrodes on his chest. All right, how about this one? Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, going all the way back to 1937. When the Seven Dwarfs run scared down the stairs and out of the door, Dopey pulls the handle of the door from the inside until it breaks and falls away. The next scene, when the dwarf opens the door, the handle is there again. Well, they're very picky about doors in animated movies, evidently. How about this? Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. When Austin is unfrozen, you see the two nurses remove wires clipped to his ears, and then they are suddenly back on. Okay. From Dusk Till Dawn, throughout the entire film, the tattoo on George Clooney's neck moves from position and changes shape. Why can't they get tattoos right in movies? That's crazy. Here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
All right.
I was watching an old Western. I think it was The Virginian. And I was watching, and it was a scene, and they were panning a shot, and I noticed there was a reflection in a glass in a window of a building behind them, and it was a red light. I said, well, what's that? So I rewound it and looked back, and it was the red light, and you could see the top of the camera.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sure it happened a lot. That's the only time I ever caught it.
No, that happens. That happens actually. That happens quite a bit when you're either in a room with some mirrors or you got a reflective piece of glass.
Yeah, it's like all the shows I've seen. That's the only time I ever caught it. But it's like it's quite interesting.
Yeah. All right, Glenn. Thanks, man.
Hey, have a nice weekend.
You too. All right. I'm trying to remember. What movie is it where someone is approaching a car? I don't know if it's like a cop pulls somebody over. Someone's approaching the car, and the camera's following the person from the back. So you see the guy approaching the car, and then once he gets up the rearview mirror, you can see the camera and the cameraman in the rearview mirror. And I can't remember what specific movie it is, but that's that's a danger in a lot of movies. That you know, I think at one point, I think Cameron Crowe pointed out, Dan, at the beginning, you know, all those like sort of like tracking shots and driving shots at the beginning of Almost Famous. I think there's sort of a tracking shot that you can see as because it's looking it seems as though you are in a car, and it's that's what it looks like is like you're in a car and you're driving through that part of California, and you can see like the camera like through the driver's side windows of the parked cars. So, but that's a common thing, and I've seen examples of that. I've seen a lot of examples of that. I can't you know name exactly every one of them, but that's a common thing. You know, you got to know what you're doing. If you're going to shoot in a movie shoot in a room with a bunch of mirrors or a lot of reflective windows, you better take precautions. Because it's going to be picked up. There's no question about it. Unless, of course, you do the crazy special effects CGI stuff where you just shoot like crazy and then digitally remove the camera from all the shots so that you just see a mirror. And I think Luca Guadagnino did that for Suspiria because there's like three major scenes that take place in a room that's nothing but mirrors. There's one pivotal scene, like brutal, disgusting scene that takes place with a woman alone in a dance hall that is surrounded wall to wall by mirrors. And the camera's in the middle and you know, doing some crazy moves, and you don't see it at all. But nowadays, you can erase that stuff. And it doesn't cost as much money. So I'll tell you this one thing. There is one subject that I will talk to Zemeckis about. He's always been on the cutting edge of movie technology and special effects, always. And when you see Marwan, my God, to this, you know, all the way from the beginning, all the way back, you know, like all the way back to Back to the Future. You know, he was doing cutting edge stuff there. And of course, Who Framed Roger Rabbit and all of his movies. And it doesn't, it's, it, he moved on even further with this one. He pushed the envelope even more with Marwan. that's always been a thing that Zemeckis has been fascinated by. So we'll cover that because I'm going to be interviewing, along with Patty Vasquez, I'm going to be interviewing one of my heroes, Robert Zemeckis, and we'll air that sometime next week. So. Yeah. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Oh, man, we're talking about continuity errors and big movie mistakes. Having some fun with that. And we'd love to hear from you. Do you have any that stand out that you've noticed over the years or some of your favorites? Big, dumb continuity errors. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Let's get back to some of these other ones that have been noticed. Mission Impossible 2. The tires on the motorcycles they are riding kept changing from knobby tires to road slicks back and forth depending on the trail. Oh, I got to sneeze.
Gesundheit.
Wow. Thank you. Where were we? The tires were changing. Easiest to see when Ethan skids on the road to avoid a white van. That's a clear shot of slick tires. Then about 30 seconds later, they're on dirt, and he skids into an old car, and you can see that those are off-road tires front and back. Well, all right. The Mummy Returns. In the British Museum, when Rick and Ardith are saving Evie, Rick gives her a .45 pistol, and they start to shoot. They start to shoot the guards. Her pistol fires once, and then the slide locks back, meaning the pistol has no ammo. But she keeps firing as if the magazine is still full. Well, now see, now that's one of those movie cliches that exist. You never run out of bullets. You know, like in most movies. Just how many bullets are fired? You could shoot 175 bullets in a six chamber gun in a movie. So, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. If you look closely at the monster, you will see that his face is different in the ending scenes. The reason is during the movie, you see the monster take the woman doctor and throw her out the laboratory window. You then see the monster kind of stumble, which he really did, and he broke his ankle. So in the final scenes, they replaced Lon Chaney Jr. as the Wolfman with a stuntman, and Lon Chaney Jr. finished the movie as the monster. I believe Sven Gulli told that story some of the many times that he's shown Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Swim Fan. Oh, my God. Swim Fan. Dan, do you remember Swim Fan?
I do. Erica Laniak or whatever her name is.
No. Erica Christensen? Erica Laniak was she was a playmate, and she was on Baywatch. Erica Christensen? She was in Traffic. She was in the Soderbergh movie Traffic. I remember Swim Fan because I was dating Helena at the time, and she was with a theater company called Barrel of Monkeys still, and she founded that theater company. It's a theater company that acts out children stories that are written by children. It's a really wonderful thing, and we used to hang out with a lot of the cast members and members of the theater company, and a bunch of us went to go see a movie. I can't remember which one it was, but they showed the trailer for Swim Fan, and all of us just busted out laughing. Like, this is the most ridiculous. This movie looks ridiculous, and the title is ridiculous. So all of the, we went opening night to see Swim Fan. Like 10 of us went. We saw it at the 600 North Michigan. I'll never forget it. We went, and it was very disappointing because it was just bad. It wasn't so bad. It was hilarious, but the trailer was, and the title is. Anyway, we have to break, but I'll tell you a continuity error that I probably didn't notice the one time I saw Swim Fan. All right, the news is coming up next. Oh, yeah, man. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios on a Friday morning. Yeah! And that means all the regular Friday features are coming up. Fly Jams Friday. Get your Fly Jam request ready to go. DJ Shagru will be spinning the discs, and we will be loving everything R&B and funky on this Friday morning. We also have Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spies, and You Big Dummy all coming up. But we're talking about movie mistakes, continuity errors. Do you have any favorites and ones that stick out for you that you've noticed? Some of these are really ridiculous and hilarious. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay, before the break, we were talking about the fantastic film from 2002, Swim Fan. Which I wish was as bad as the trailer and as bad as the title, but it's not. It's just bad. It wasn't hilarious bad. But here's the continuity mistake. When SwimFan85 is trying to talk to Ben and he tells her he has homework to get done, she is talking to him with the nickname SwimFan85, but when she signs off, it says SwimFan has signed off. They forgot to add the 85. Oh, yeah, I remember that. How about this one? Jurassic Park. When Tim and Lex first arrive, Lex is wearing a purple tank top with a colorful design. And in the following scenes, or even between consecutive shots, her tank top changes to completely different designs, though it's the same style of tank top. I did not notice that. Chicago. Best Picture winner from 2002. Oddly, Swim Fan did not win Best Picture that year. In the final scene where Roxy and Velma are dancing in the concert hall, Roxy is on the right and Velma is on the left. Then they turn around and from behind, same point of view, they're suddenly the other way around. These people are watching like hawks, man. The Matrix. When Agent Smith is interrogating Neo, after Smith has sealed Neo's mouth shut and he is backed into the corner, when the camera cuts back to Smith, you can clearly see a reflection in his glasses of Neo still sitting in the chair. Uh-oh. Well, he's Neo, man. He can do anything. He's the one. Here is Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
One of the great bad movies ever made, Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth.
Love that movie.
There's a motorcycle chase scene, and William Forsythe is chasing Brian Bosworth, and he goes, he has a headband on.
Yeah.
And then they cut back to Brian Bosworth, and then he doesn't have it on, and he has it on, he doesn't have
it on. Yeah, it's one of those, huh?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, also Taxi Driver. There's a scene where De Niro's got real short, close-cropped hair. And then the next scene, it's hanging over his forehead. And then the next scene, he's got his close-cropped hair again.
Yeah, no, you know what? Scorsese acknowledged that. That happens throughout the entire movie. Like, I think he ended up getting a haircut. I don't know if it was for another role or something like that. But yeah, you're right. It does change. But, you know, a real quick story about Stone Cold, Tom. You know. Yeah. I've had Lance Hendrickson on the show many times.
Oh, I love him.
He's the best. He's the best. And one of my favorite Lance Hendrickson stories, and he's also really cool and a nice guy. I had him on. I mentioned how much I love him in Stone Cold because I think he's great in Stone
Cold. Oh, he's great. He's great.
Yeah. And so I mentioned, and he said that, you know, that's that was his mother's favorite role that he ever had. And like, you know, and Lance Hendrickson has played a lot of weirdos and villains and stuff.
Yes.
But I don't think I think that's the worst character he's ever, like the meanest, craziest character he's ever played. And his
mom says that one line where he says, "What, your last line, your dad, watch it, son. I think that gun's loaded."
Yeah. And I think he's great in it, but like, I just find it so funny that his mom was a, you know, like really quiet spoken, lovely woman who he took her to the premiere of Stone Cold. She's like, "That's the best character you've ever played." I love
that. Well, villains are great. Everybody wants to play a villain.
Yeah, and Lance Henderson does it great, man. So,
Okay.
All right, Tom, take care.
Okay, bye.
See ya. You ever see that movie, Brian Bosworth and Stone Cold?
Yeah, it is pretty entertaining.
I love that movie. I love it. But it should have been It should have been called Nothing Gets Accomplished. Because everybody gets killed. The cops do nothing. Like everybody, all the people that they're trying to save, everybody gets killed. It should have been called Nothing Gets Accomplished.
That was back when they were trying to make Brian Bosworth into a movie star. You ever see I Come in Peace? It's an alien invasion movie with Dolph Lundgren.
No.
From the 80s. Dolph Lundgren, who, by the way, is legitimately great in Creed 2. Like, he's seriously, he's great in it. Like, it's a really, really, really good performance. It's a great performance. But anyway, after Rocky IV, again, like Brian Bosworth, they tried to make him... Wasn't he in Masters of the Universe, right, Dolph Lundgren? Right. Okay, so they tried to make him Masters of the Universe. They tried to make him all this other stuff. And then they did this action movie about an alien invasion, and he has to fight off an alien invasion, you know, with guns and stuff, and it's called I Come in Peace, and it's a terrible movie, much worse and funnier than Swim Fan, let me just say that. But there's a line in the movie that they actually put in the trailer, and it's fantastic. He's got, like, I don't know, he's got a machine gun or he's got a shotgun or something, and there's an alien coming at him. And the alien says like something like the alien says, if I'm not mistaken, I come in peace. And Dolph Lundgren's response is, "You go in pieces." Then that's one of my favorite exchanges. I come in peace. You go in pieces. Happy Gilmore, in the beginning of the movie, he is not taken on to the hockey team. After he is hustling at the driving range, he goes to toughen up. As he's toughening up, Chubbs unplugs the machine. The kid tries it. He never plugged it back in, but the machine still manages to work. All right. How about the Fast and the Furious? When Jesse is going to race Johnny Tran at Race Wars for pink slips, and Johnny Tran pulls up in a Honda S2000, Tran has a black short-sleeve T-shirt. When the camera goes from side to front view, Tran is now wearing a black tank top. That takes, if you're curious, that takes place 1 hour, 12 minutes, and 41 seconds into the Fast and the Furious. And I know all of you have your Fast and the Furious DVDs queued up and ready to go. Let's see. How about this? 10 Things I Hate About You. When Kat and Patrick are playing paintball right before they kiss, you can see that they're barely covered in paint. When they do kiss and are on the ground, they are totally covered in paint. Oh, I have one. It's from the movie Teachers. Do you ever see the movie? Has anybody in your family, Dan, ever seen the movie Teachers?
No, I don't think so.
Nick Nolte, an early Crispin Glover performance. Trying to remember who else is in that. Teachers. Joe Beth Williams, perhaps? From 1984, I want to say. But Nolte is the star. Oh, Macchio's in it. Ralph Macchio's in it. Who else is in it? Is it Joe Beth Williams? Was I right about that?
Coming up.
Okay. I'm trying to remember who. Somebody played the principal, too. And I want to say it might have been Judd Hirsch. But anyway, there's a fantastic continuity error in Teachers that just kills me every time.
Yes, Joe Beth Williams and Judd Hirsch.
Joe Beth Williams, Judd Hirsch, Ralph Macchio.
Nick Nolte,
Crispin Glover is in it. You know what? That's one of those movies, Dan, that falls under the category of I know it's crap, but I love it. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, sure.
And it's a bad movie, but I love it. I love it. But anyway, there's a scene where Crispin Glover, if I remember correctly, goes nuts in the school, has a gun in his locker, and ends up shooting someone or shooting himself or something. Something terrible happens with the gun in the hallway of the high school. And they cut to Nick Nolte, and Nick Nolte, when he hears the gunshot, Nick Nolte whips his head around to see what's happening in the hallway. And his hair, like, flies up on top of his head. Like someone took, like, a mixer, you know, for making pancakes. He took a mixer and stuck it in his hair, and so that it's sticking straight up inside. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So they cut to it, and he's looking, and the hair is sticking straight up and weird. And then they cut to whatever it is that happened, the kid who shot or whatever. They cut back, his hair's normal.
And then they cut back again. They cut back. His hair's crazy again. And it's just so noticeable because the hair is hilarious. Like the way the hair landed is one of those things where you can't cut back and forth between regular looking hair and the ridiculous looking hair that Nick Nolte had. But they do it back and forth. It's one of my favorites. That's actually one of my favorites. Again, not a good movie, but I love it. All right, how about Top Gun? When Charlie is first introduced to the class, she struts down the aisle in heels. When she follows Maverick into the building, you can briefly see that she is wearing flats to compensate for Maverick's short stature. Now, would that be for Maverick's short stature, or would that be for Tom Cruise's short stature? Because, you know, because she wasn't in the same shot with Tom Cruise when she had the heels on. By the way, speaking of heels, fantastic use of women's heels in the movie Welcome to Marwen. Let me just say, it's an integral part of the movie. Training Day. Ooh, Training Day. Towards the end, Denzel drives his car into two cars trying to get Ethan off the hood. After that scene ends, you see Denzel driving the same car, and the front and rear of the car look nothing like they did when he crashed into the cars. Don't be dissing on Training Day, man. That's a mistake. Don't do it. Don't do it. I know people hate the ending of that movie. All my friends think it sucks. The ending sucks. I love that movie. And both those guys are great in it. That's my second favorite Denzel performance of all time. My first being Flight, directed by Robert Zemeckis, by the way. All right, let's do another one here. We'll do two more here, and then we'll move on. Take a break, and we'll come back with all the regular stuff. Let's do this: Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. When Dell comes out of the passenger side of the dairy truck, he is seen with a black eye for no reason. The next scene, it's not there, but then it is when he admits to being homeless. And then finally, Speed. There's a few continuity errors in Speed, and it's mostly to do with things on the bus, like the damage that's done to the bus. I think they cut to certain things, and like the damage that had not been done was already there or something to that effect. But here's what they say. Early in the film, Jack shoots Harry through the left thigh. At the police awards ceremony, Harry is using a cane on his right side, and his limp favors his right leg. After the ceremony in the bar, when Harry gets drunk and starts to leave, he is using the cane on his left side, and his limp favors his left leg.
There you go.
Well, he was drunk. He couldn't feel anything at that point. Yeah, Jeff Daniels is good in that movie. Hey, Dan, remember when we did the topic? It was a long time ago. We should do it again. Was when a character in a movie dies and you go, oh, man. Jeff Daniels in Speed. Way up there. Number one for me, Busey in Point Break. When Busey dies in Point Break, every time... I saw that movie in the theater like 5-6 times. Every time they shoot Busey, oh, everybody loves Angelo Pappas and his two meatball sandwiches, best I've ever tasted. Would you get me two? Utah, get me two. One of the greatest lines in film history. All right, well there you go. Those are continuity errors, and you know, I hope you have fun with that. We're going to take a break, and then the regular Friday features shall commence.
Here's dummy. You big dummy.
You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
That's right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Friday morning, and we're starting with our regular Friday features with You Big Dummy. Coming up, we've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and Fly Jams Friday. And also coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So this is when we read real dumb news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote. And you can be a part of it, too, if you want to read a story on the air. Find a link to a funny, dumb story. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com.
and you can read it on the air and get some Lou Malnati's pizza. Also, when we're done reading, we'll do a recap. Dan and I will vote, and then first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. An apparent Grinch was spotted on surveillance video plowing through a Christmas display outside a suburban Indianapolis home. WRTV broadcast the video, recorded Sunday night by a neighbor's camera in Greenwood. The video starts with a man getting out of a black SUV, then walking up to take a closer look at the front yard, where Casey Arnold says her family had a 12-foot-tall inflatable snowman. Then the man got back into his vehicle, backs up, drives through the family's yard and over the decoration. Arnold says they heard a pop while watching a Christmas movie. Tire tracks were in the yard.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period. Dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy two. Search is on for a man in Albuquerque that police say impersonated a Walmart employee to steal televisions and piñatas. KRQE-TV in Albuquerque reports the man struck an Albuquerque Walmart the day after Black Friday, the shopping rush, by dressing in a store employee uniform and using a six-wheeler cart to take his loot. According to police, the man went up to an employee-only area where he took the cart and loaded up two televisions and two piñatas. Officials say the man left without paying. Albuquerque police this week released still images of the suspect from surveillance camera footage, but no arrests have been made.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Yes, Donna and me.
Dummy makes three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. By the way, we have a link on our Facebook page for this one. This is one of the many reasons you should like our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like it, go there now. Facebook.com/Nick D Show and find the link to this story. Drivers on a Houston highway had to think fast to get out of the way of a giant spool that fell off from a truck and went rolling through traffic. A local principal, Laura Hogan, who was riding a bus with about 25 students and some teachers, captured the video of a large blue spool crossing lanes of traffic. Hogan told KTRK-TV, "When you're taking a group of students, you don't expect a Ferris wheel to come right at you." She said the spool fell off the back of an 18-wheeler. Police said the semi-truck driver is cooperating with an investigation into the incident that will likely, and he will receive a citation.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy.
All right, we got a break here for the news. We got two more dummy stories to go through, and then we will vote and continue with the Friday morning regular features here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6. Then after Steve Cochran's show, make sure you stay tuned for the radio play, It's a Wonderful Life, right here on 720 WGN. We are back. Nick DiGilio here, and it's Friday, so that means we get a big back to our regular Friday features. We're going to get back to You Big Dummy, and then we've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then we'll kick off the funky morning with Fly Jams Friday. Let's get back to it. We got two more dummies to tell you about. Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy number four. A man who authorities say was possibly trying to burglarize an abandoned Chinese restaurant has been rescued from the grease vent. The Almedia County Sheriff's Office says deputies and firefighters were called to a vacant building in San Lorenzo on Wednesday after someone heard cries for help. The office says that when the officials arrived, they found a grease-covered man stuck in a metal vent. Sergeant Ray Kelly says the San Francisco Chronicle tells the San Francisco Chronicle that the man was in generally good condition despite being exposed to the elements. Kelly says the unidentified man was taken to the hospitals and deputies will decide later whether to book him or into jail or to just issue a citation.
I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber. The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them.
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. Commuters on a busy English road were delayed by an unusual hazard, a runaway inflatable Santa Claus blocking the road. A video captured Tuesday by surprise witness Mohammed Farid on a road in Wibbick shows the inflatable Father Christmas rolling through lanes of traffic on a busy road. Farid said the Santa had apparently come loose from where it had been displayed in a nearby resident's front yard. He said the Santa was bigger than his car.
My only child is a dummy.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy.
All right. All right, we have to vote. Let's do a little recap here. And then after the recap, and Dan and I vote, first person through at 312-981-7200 will be the third vote for Dummy of the Week. All right. We've got the guy who ran over a 12-foot Santa in the yard. I like that he got out of the car and looked at it. The guy who impersonated a Walmart employee to steal TVs and pinatas. The truck driver who failed to secure his massive spool, which, by the way, you can see that link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. The guy who got stuck in a grease vent, and the guy whose huge inflatable Santa flew into the highway. Some nice holiday-themed dummies this week. They're very timely. Very nice. Okay, Dan, where are you going with this?
You know, I too appreciate the fact that that guy got out of the house, you know, got out of his car to look at it. Yeah. And he was just like, all right, this is the one. Yeah. This one right here. I also like the fact that they were watching a holiday movie when it happened.
When it happened. They heard a big pop.
Yep. I'm interested to find out when they capture this guy, if they ever capture this guy, if he went in for the pinatas and then decided to grab the TV, or if he was in for the TVs and then grabbed the pinatas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting question. That's the detail. The piñatas are the detail that I find most interesting. Yes. In the story.
The picture with number three is just so weird because it just looks like a big spool of, you know, thread is just traveling down the highway. It could be a car. It's that big.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if I was driving, I can imagine just seeing it, not knowing what to do. Anytime you get stuck in a grease vent, that's funny.
That's comedy.
Huge Santa. You know, the pinatas put it over the top for me. I will go too this week.
You're going a guy who impersonated a Walmart employee to steal TVs and pinatas. Okay. The guy stuck in the grease vent's pretty special, especially since it was an abandoned Chinese restaurant. That's my favorite detail there. What was he going to steal? Nothing. Or did he come in for grease and he just got stuck? The huge inflatable Santa flying down the highway. I would love to have a visual of that. That would be very funny.
I'm really close, but it's between the first two. It's between the guy who got out of the car and then just said, you know what, I'm running over this damn Santa. I can't take it anymore. I kind of like that. Or the guy who impersonated the Walmart for the TVs and pinatas. So, you know what? I'm gonna go with the guy who ran over the Santa. So we got to have a tiebreaker. 312-981-7200. The first person through, either it's the 12-foot Santa being run over by the guy who got out of the car, or it's the guy who impersonated a Walmart employee to steal TVs and pinatas. Vote for one of those, and that breaks the tie. So call us right now, 312-981-7200. First person through, you cast the deciding vote. 312-981-7200. It's either the guy who got out of the car, looked at the Santa, and then just completely busted down the fence and ran it over, or the Walmart guy, fake Walmart guy, who steals TVs and pinatas. 312-981-7200. Come on, you can call in now. First person through who wants to vote, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, so you will be the deciding vote. Okay, I think we've got somebody here. We've got somebody? Okay. It's Bob on WGN. You're the first one in. Bob, who are you voting for?
Well, I'll vote for the grease pit, because not only did he get arrested, but he's probably going to get a hospital bill.
Well, you got to vote for either the
I'm voting for number four.
No. You got to vote for the final two, because we're tied.
Oh, I'll go for the pinata.
Oh, the pinatas. Okay, there you go. All right, thank you, Bob. He was just bound. Bob was bound to vote for grease.
Bob wanted four.
He wanted grease vent man. Grease vent man, who, by the way, was featured in the Spider-Man movie that I saw last night. See what I did there? Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute now. Hold on. Well, there it is. It's the guy who impersonated the Walmart employee to steal TVs and pinatas. That's a good dummy, I got to say. Pinata is a lovely touch. Should we just break and then come back fresh?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, let's do that. Let's take a break here for the weather, and we come back. We've got Straight Outta Context coming your way. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb.
Context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. Straight out of context, everybody. This is one of our regular Friday features. Nick DiGilio here on a Friday morning, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Here till 5, and Straight Out of Context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context at any time, and it sounds a little dirty, and you it makes you giggle, you jot down the date, the time, who said it, and you send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, shall we begin, Dan?
We shall. We shall begin with Brian. He heard this one of Lou Manfredini. Oop. Hang on one second.
Unless you're sitting on it, it's not going to warm you.
What was he talking about?
Mary Sandberg Boyle was talking about those infomercial products, you know, the ones that you can, like, plug into an outlet, and it says it can heat the whole room.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and so Lou, having tested those, realized that is not the case, and that's the only way to keep warm is...
Okay, there you go. Sit on it, Potsy. All right.
Streamwood Steve is responsible for the next couple ones. First up, Lisa Wolf.
We're going to play with Carl.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. All right.
And then this one of Carl Amari.
Lisa has one in her hands.
Jeez. Oh, man. They can make anything sound dirty on this segment, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Absolutely. Okay. Back to Lisa. This one also sent to us by Jesse.
Try it my way and see how it feels.
Wow. What's going on that show?
I don't know, man.
It's filth. It's filth and flarn is what it is. All right.
Stream with Steve also brings us this one of Rick Pearson.
I definitely want it.
So is Sunday the filthiest night and day on this show?
That's a good question.
On this radio station?
Oh, I got to sneeze.
Okay. Hold on.
Gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right. Wild Bill emailed this one of you.
We want you to pretend you're Rick.
Where did that go?
What happened there?
I don't know. Hang on once. Technical difficulties.
Little technical difficulties. And we want to, who are we listening to? Oh, me, right?
Yes,
the next one is
you.
Me. See, it doesn't want you to play it. That's why.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what it is.
Let's try this. Let's see what happens here.
I can't remember the last time my fly was open. Oh, man, I know. I knew that was, I knew it. As soon as I said it, I knew it. I knew it. Oh, man. That we were talking about etiquette, everybody. What was it? The animals are getting out of the barn?
Yeah,
or
the animals are
loose
of the barn.
Yeah. Okay.
And then this one, Brian sent in this one of Wendy Snyder.
Poor Jimmy Mack. I made him massage it like for hours last night.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Okay.
And finally, Fox Valley Mike heard another one of Wendy.
It's a bed buddy.
A bed buddy? A bed buddy? Do you have to sit on it to get warm? That would be my first question. That would be my first question. Oh, see, look at this now. I'm starting to get loopy, Dan.
I can imagine.
It's been a long
day.
Long day. Yeah, I didn't sleep much. The screening of the Welcome to Marwen movie, which, by the way, is spectacular. That was 4 o'clock this afternoon, so it was 12 hours ago. I only slept a couple hours before that. Then I saw the Spider-Man movie. Then I saw the Mortal Engines movie. Then I came here and are at a 4.5-hour part of the show. So I'm a little looped right now. So, but I do want to say very quickly, Robert Zemeckis is going to be on our show and on Patty's show. Patty and I are going to interview Robert Zemeckis, and we'll play it back on Tuesday or Wednesday, and I get to meet him. Dan, I'm a little excited.
And not even loopy excited, really excited. No,
like really, really excited. He's one of my heroes, truly one of my heroes, and I think one of the greatest American directors that's ever worked in this business, and I love him. So I'm very excited to meet him. And his new movie's great. The Welcome to Marwen. It's not getting the kind of exposure that it deserves. Like, it's not ending up on top 10 lists at the end of the year. It hasn't really been thoroughly screened. I mean, Patty and I were, you know, Patty's got a pretty good connection there. Patty knows Robert's wife, Robert Zemeckis' wife, Leslie, who's in the movie, and she's great in the movie. Been on Patty's show a few times, and that's how this whole thing got all set up. And we saw the movie. I mean, it was basically it was a screening that was basically for me and Patty. So this is pretty cool. It's pretty cool, and they've been so great about it, you know. And Robert's going to come in, and we're going to talk to him. So he's in town tomorrow. Well, that's when we're going to talk to him tomorrow. But you'll hear it Tuesday or Wednesday. But we're going to talk to him. No, I'm sorry. Today. Today's Friday. Yes. See. Today.
There you go.
We'll talk to him tonight. In fact. There is a big screening of it at the River East tonight, and he's going to join us and then go over to the River East and do the Q&A after the movie. So he's going to be down there. I think Carell's in town, if I'm not mistaken. I think Steve Carell is in town, and I know that Leslie is in town, and I'm sure she's going to be there for the Q&A because she's really funny in the movie. He cast her in a very interesting part. I won't give it away. There's no way I'd give it away. But she's one of the women of Marwen who in this world that the Steve Carell character, real guy by the way, based on a true story, creates in order to get through the angst that he feels in his life. He creates this little world called Marwen, and she's one of the ladies of Marwen. So she gets to be a figure too. So she gets to be like one of the little dolls. So anyway, so Zemeckis is. We'll hear it. You'll hear it on Patty's show and on my show because we're both gonna interview Zemeckis, and I couldn't be more excited. I'm gonna meet him tonight. One of my heroes. All right, let's break here for the news, and then we come back. We've got some spies.
We do.
We got some spies, and then we've got some jams, and we'll do all that after the news.
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all the fuss? The
this.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies, spies, spies. Like us. That's right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, as we are every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we are into our regular Friday features. And this is Nick D Show Spies. You know what this is. This is when you listen 24/7 and whenever anybody at any time talks about me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. And you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we have some spies this week.
We do. We have two, okay. Kevin from Lockport and Celine. In this first clip, Mark Herman and Harry Tynewitz were talking about Bryce Harper possibly coming to the White Sox. And so they asked listeners to call in and talk about reasons Bryce Harper should move to Chicago and why he would love Chicago. And you got mentioned.
What?
We want you to pretend you're Rick Hahn, and you are sitting across from Bryce Harper having dinner. What would you say to him? We're giving you 30 seconds. Unless you really got us intrigued, then you can stay on and keep going.
I mean, the 224 has got it. Chicago has Nick D on WGN. Great text right there.
Seriously great.
Overnight. He gets out a guaranteed rate field. He winds down. He doesn't go to sleep immediately. He puts on Nick D. He has a great overnight experience.
That was nice. That was very nice of that listener. Wow. Oh. Trying to get Bryce Harper to come to town with me? By using me as some sort of negotiation? Not going to work, man.
I was going to say, if that seals the deal, I think you need to get a cut of that contract.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then if Bryce Harper starts sending in spies and straight out of context, absolutely.
We'd be fine with having him part of the show.
Sure. Yeah, of course. That was nice, though. That was pretty cool. I love my listeners. Okay.
Next up, Andrea Darlis was talking about Friends and mentioned the TV show Friends and mentioned you.
Hey, were you guys Friends fans? Did you ever watch Friends?
Oh, sure.
Okay. All the time, yeah.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you watch an episode and you'll be like, you'll have seen it, but you'll still watch it, like the remote dropper, as Nick DiGilio calls it?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's one of those comfort shows, I think you can call it. Like, if you're going to bed and you put on the Friends, you're going to fall asleep and know every single word, so you can kind of enjoy it without even listening to it.
Oh, I thought they were going to go into the fact that I can't stand that show. I thought they were going to go into the fact that I've only seen one full episode of Friends, just one. Well, I should say one full episode with the sound on, because it's on like three times a night during my show. It's on overnights on Channel 9. They showed at least twice during my show. So it's on in here, but there's no sound. So I don't know what the hell's going on. The only time I ever watched a full episode of Friends was because we were stuck on the tarmac at LaGuardia in New York. And they popped the VHS in and said, "Here, we want to entertain you for at least a half an hour." And it was an episode of Friends. That's the only time I've ever seen an episode of Friends from beginning to end. And as I sit in the studio here, because I know you watched Friends, you were a fan of Friends. Every night at some point I go, "Wait a minute, Reese Witherspoon was on Friends," or I go, "Wait a minute, Brad Pitt." Well, I knew Brad Pitt was on Friends because he was married to Jennifer Aniston at the time, or was he?
I believe so. Yeah.
And then, Julia Roberts was on. I'm like, what? So I am fascinated by some of the guest stars that they get on, but the show never did anything for me. I couldn't get into it. Now, Seinfeld, on the other hand, they were talking about comfort shows. I know every episode of Seinfeld by heart, and I watch them over and over and over again. Even the ones I don't like, I watch just so I can get angry. Like, I'll watch the auto dealership episode where George is completely unhinged and psychotic, and I hate that episode, but I'll watch it and just so I can go, what the hell is George doing? So, anyway. So I thought I was a little misled by that. I'm glad she mentioned the remote dropper. That's nice, but I thought they were going to go into how much I hate Friends and that I'm in the minority on that. So, All right. Well, there's your spies, everybody. Bryce Harper, get ready to send some in. All right. Should we do the thing?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
That's right. Little Johnny Kemp. I love that song. That's the quintessential fly jam. Just got paid. Because he says just got paid. It's Friday night. Yeah. Fly Jams Friday night. So the phone lines are open right now, and DJ Shagru is ready to go. Wiki Wiki Nikki is ready to go. Esmeralda the Heart Melda is somewhere melding hearts. And then Viggity Viggity Vig Verified Double V running around like a lunatic, as he always does every Friday morning in the newsroom. Phone lines, text lines are open. Get your requests in now. Call us up. 312-981-7200 for anything funky and anything R&B. 312-981-7200. Do we have my first thoughts?
Never raises the funds. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Between love and hate. It's a dinner. It's a dinner. Between love and hate. It's a dinner. Between love and hate.
Yeah. I was forget, who did this version?
H-Town,
right. It's H-Town. And that was from the Martin Lawrence movie, Thin Line Between Love and Hate. Who was the female lead in that? I don't remember.
It looks like Angela Bassett.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Angela Bassett, yeah. Thin Line Between Love and Hate. It's a great song. So that's how we're kicking off Fly Jams Friday. Get in here, everybody. 312-981-7200. All right, let's try this one. 773 area code is picking this classic by Eddie Kendricks. That's a great song. Eddie Kendrick from The Temptations, Keep on Truckin'. And again, Dan, that song is about 77 minutes long.
You are correct.
That's a very, very long song. It's a great one, too, but it's long. Man, it goes on. Remember when people said Keep on Truckin'? No, you weren't alive, Dan, when people said Keep on Truckin'. Come on, man, Keep on Truckin'. Yeah. All right, here's Chuck on WGN. All right, Chuck, what's your request?
Frank Sinatra celebrated a birthday this week, and in honor of that, I found a Fly Jam version of Merry Little Christmas.
All right, well, let's hear it. Is this credited to anyone?
Yes, it is courtesy of Frosty's Chill. Or, well, it's the Frosty's Chill Step mix.
Oh, so it's Frosty Chill Step.
That's a good question. I don't know if it's Frosty, if it's DJ Frosty and it's his Chill Step mix, or if it's Frosty's Chill Step mix, like Frosty Chill Step, and
right.
It's his mix.
And it's his mix. Yeah. Well, either way, that's what it is. They just took Frank's original. I was a little confused at first when Chuck said that he found a Fly Jam version of the song. They took Frank's vocals and they put it over a hot Fly beat. And they did some hot mixing, like Richard Nixon, like Donner and Blitzen,
Thunder and Lightning.
That's right, man. Thank you, Chuck. All right, let's take a break. I'm still trying to recover from that. What's his name? Fat Step Swanson? What is it?
Frosty's Chill Step.
Frosty's Chill Step. All right. Thank you, Frosty's Chill Steps. All right. Let's take a break for the weather. We come back. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for some Fly Jam requests if you want to get in here. Remember, next week's Fly Jam Friday, is the last Fly Jam Friday before Christmas. So it's all going to be holiday Christmas-related Fly Jams next week, a week from this morning. Yeah, yeah, you know I will. I surely will. I will never do anything to hurt you. Wouldn't do a single thing to hurt. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Fly Jams, little Keith Sweat. Sweating it up with the sweat. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Fly Jams Friday. Fly Jams Friday. DJ Shagru spinning the requests. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, Dan, I just want to make an observation. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Dan. You know where our office is.
I do.
Yes. Now, you don't use it as often as I do.
Correct.
You do a lot of your prep work and other stuff in, like, editing bays and rooms where you can have the equipment that you need it. So you're not in there as often as I am.
Correct.
Okay. So have you noticed, now, you know, right outside of our office, there is a, there's like a conference table right in the middle of the hallway.
Right.
Right? And then there's some chairs there and a computer if you want to use it. And, you know, it's a nice little conference table right there filling up the long hallway. Have you noticed what's on that conference table?
I have noticed many odd things lately. I don't know which one. Oh, yeah, yes, this morning I did notice, yes.
There's a used shake weight. Why is there a used shake weight on the table outside of our office?
I mean, I think it is the de facto free table now, because I have seen T-shirts.
Who is going to take a used shake weight?
It is the end of the year, Nick. You know, there's a lot of holiday parties. Perhaps somebody is trying to get a jump, you know.
Wait a minute.
And they're
Hold on a second. You bring used shake weights to parties? Is that what you do with?
No, you just say, you know, you know you're going to put on a few pounds. The average American, I believe, puts on 7 to 8 pounds during the holiday season. So perhaps
78 pounds.
7 to 8 pounds.
Oh God! I thought you said the average is 78 pounds. It's a lot of damage in 2 months. But I just find it, I don't know, because it's clearly a used shake weight.
Yes.
Like, there's dirt on it and stuff. And it's just sitting there. I walk in and I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell? Is that a shake weight? And then I get a little closer and I notice the condition that it's in and the dirt that's on it. And I was like, this is a kind of a dirty, used shake weight that's sitting 3 feet away from the door of our office and with no note, no explanation. So anyway, I just didn't know whether you had noticed that there's a dirty used shake weight on the table right outside of our office. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yes.
Nothing says holidays like a dirty used shake weight. That was, I don't know. I don't even know what to say anymore. Now, I know it's become like a free table, but some people, when they put the T-shirts and stuff out there, they leave a note.
Mm.
that says take a t-shirt. They had Christmas ornaments out there like last week. Take a Christmas ornament or blah, blah, blah. They're free. This has nothing. It's just a used shake weight that's just sitting on the table. Like somebody was standing in the hallway by the conference room, you know, doing the shake weight, doing the weird shake weight thing, and then just went, eh, and dropped it on the table and walked away. I'm sorry. I thought you said 78 pounds. I thought you said the average American gained 78 pounds. Like, good Lord, I'm not eating enough. All right, are we ready for more requests, DJ Shagru?
Yes, we are.
Are we going to get a request for the Shake Weight theme?
Yeah, remix. Frosty Chill Step remix.
Frosty Chill Steps remix. Here's John on WGN. John, what do you got?
Morning, Nick.
Morning.
I would like to play Betty Davis, Don't Call Her No Tramp.
All right, here we go. Don't take too long. No, don't take too long. Go. Nice one, John. Nice one. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. Let's see. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
How are you doing?
All right.
Hey, first time you had the former Mrs. Miles Davis on the show there.
Yeah.
Davis. Yeah. Okay, you look, yesterday I kind of missed your show with the famous great singers, and I got one for you here.
Okay.
Levi Stubbs of the Four Tops singing Shake Me, Wake Me When It's Over.
Let's do it. That's a great voice right there.
Great voice.
Great
voice,
yeah. You know, so I got to say, somebody was mad at me that we did that whole thing. We talked about great singers, and somebody is very angry that nobody mentioned Daryl Hall. And seriously, now I'm like, uh-oh, that's because that was a big omission, I think.
There's a lot of omissions, yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of omissions, exactly, but still.
Yeah. One of Rod Stewart's favorites was David Ruffin of the Temptations.
David Ruffin. All of the Temptations were good. We just played Eddie Kendricks, too. So.
Eddie Kendricks, right.
All right. Okay, Mike, thanks, buddy.
All right, take care, man. Have a
good
weekend.
Yeah, there was somebody was not pleased that we did not include Daryl Hall. I was going to say Daryl Hammond. We were very upset about not including Daryl Hammond.
One quick correction, people are letting us know. It was Lynn Whitfield who was in A Thin Line Between.
Oh, Lynn Whitfield. Okay. Wow, somebody saw that movie? Somebody listening to the show saw that movie? I think we got time for one last one, right? And this guy was mentioned yesterday. He was mentioned yesterday on the great voices of voice singing. The one and only Barry White, everybody. Yeah. All right. Fly Jams Friday. We'll do it again next week. Remember, next week, it's all holiday or Christmas-themed Fly Jams. So keep that in mind and be a part of all of our Friday features. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, You Big Dummy, all that cool stuff. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back again on Monday with we'll have a lot of movies to talk about on Monday and more. But let's take a break here. The news is coming up after this.